Morning, Jay.
Good morning, Mandy.
Hello, Chair. It's 10 o'clock now, Chair, and sufficient members are present to start meeting if you are ready.
Okay. Okay, thank you. Good morning. Good morning, honorable members.
Good morning, Chairperson.
Morning, Chairperson.
Good morning,
morning.
Chair.
Good morning. Honorable members, we are about to start with our meeting. It's already a minute past 10. The agenda is there. One is opening and welcome. Then number two is apologies. Number three, adoption of agenda. Number four, the Department of Justice briefing on the state readiness to implement GBVF-related laws. Number five is discussion. Number six is committee business. 6.1 is adoption of the MPWC draft action plan on gender-based violence and femicide. Number seven is closing remarks followed by adjournment. This is the program which is going to guide us in our meeting this morning. Those who doesn't have a problem with the network, when you are about to speak, please make sure that you open your video so that you can be seen, because I think they are showing it on the on 408 and other media lines of our parliament. Thank you very much, honorable members. My flesh and my heart may fail, but God is the strength of my heart and my portion forever. I quoted these words from Psalm 73, verse 26. I wanted to encourage every one of us here that one day, as women of this country, as leaders of this country, as leaders of our own families, as mothers, as partners or fiancé of these criminals, these serial killers, these rapists, these monsters, as these caucus, one day we shall overcome. When the 3GBVF Act amendment were concluded and passed to be laws, when the commitment of every one of us will be to see or to live in a GB-free country. My conscience also tells me that even in this meeting or this platform, there are women that are being abused, women that are abused by their own partners, women that are abused by their own family members, women that are abused by their superiors, women that are abused by their church leaders, women that are abused by other women. To name the few, we need to free ourselves first in order to free others. Let love lead. Honorable members, before we go any further with our meeting, I would love to conscientize each of us now to bow our head for a moment of silence or meditation in remembering the heroines of our country that were brutally murdered because of GBV. Let's bow our heads. May their souls continue to rest in power. Honorable members, the chief whip of the majority party, the deputy chief whip, the speaker of our national parliament, the deputy speaker, ministers and deputy ministers, the Department of Justice, officials from the department, the parliament staff, and fellow South Africans, good morning. Good morning, everyone. In all that we are going through, let's not lose hope. Let's soldier on. In 2 Corinthians 12:9, the Bible says, His grace is sufficient for us, for His power is made perfect in weaknesses. Honorable members, let's proceed with our meeting. Secretary, do we have any apologies for today's meeting?
Yes, Chair, we received 10 apologies. Those apologies are from Minister Dlamini Zuma, Minister Dedeza, Minister Zulu, Ms. Sharif, Ms. Maseko Jele, Ms. Priet, Ms. Boshoff, Ms. Bebe, Ms. Sukers, and Ms. Lesoma.
Thank you very much, Honorable Members. We did receive 10 apologies. And on this platform, we have 63 members. Anyone to adopt the agenda?
Chairperson Mantuli.
Yes, I see the hand of the Honorable Mantuli.
Yes, Chair. I rise to adopt the agenda. But Chair, as I adopt the agenda, I want to thank you very much for your wise words in your opening remarks. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Honorable Ntuli. Honorable Jane. Manani.
Thank you, Chairperson. Allow me to switch off my video based on the connectivity in my place. One would want to second the adoption of the agenda by Mantuli. Thank you.
Thank you very much. The agenda has been adopted. We're proceeding now to the fourth item, and that will be the briefing from the department. I'm not so sure whether the minister is with us today. If the minister is not there, I do believe that the DM Yes, I can see that the DM is with us. Then I can give the... I can hand over to the DM to lead the department. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chair, good morning to all the honourable members. Indeed, the minister has sent apologies. He's got a program in the Eastern Cape of returning remains of people who were executed in terms of the death penalty to their families. He's not able to make it. I'm accompanied by Advocate Praise Kambula, the Chief Director for Vulnerable Groups, but who's also the person leading Pillar 3 of the National, the NSP. And she will take you through the presentation that I think was distributed beforehand. Just to say that, to thank Parliament for passing the bills. The President assented to them in January. The implementation is a bit more complicated. It's not just a thing simply of signing it into law and then it takes effect. There's various steps that need to be taken, particularly the drafting of regulations. And Advocate Kambule will give you a report on how far things are with that process. So, Chair, through you, if I can hand over to Advocate Kambule.
Thank you very much, DM. We really appreciate your presence. Advocate Kambula, maybe we're going to adopt you as this caucus. You are always available and be there to serve the department. Thank you very much. Over to you, Advocate.
Thank you, Chair. And thanks for the invitation as well. And for the opening word that you gave us, we really appreciate. And I'm also thanking the DM for the introduction and thanking the committee for giving us this opportunity to present. I would request the permission to share my presentation from my side with your permission, Chair.
Permission granted. Mandy, can you share with her?
Yes, Chair, Ms. Kambula has been made co-host. Thank you. Advocate?
Is the presentation showing a chair?
No, not at all.
Not what is happening. All right.
It mustn't spoil your day.
No, it cannot. I don't know why, because I'm like sharing the screen and it is open. It's supposed to be showing. And I would really like to control it from my side. I don't know why.
No, it's not showing.
Okay, let me just...
I only see the beautiful lady in front of me.
Thank you, Chair.
It's really beautiful.
Wow, why is it not showing? Because I'm sharing it from my side. Let me just try again. I've been doing this for some time. So it's not usually a problem for me to share. Okay, let me just start from the beginning. Why is it not showing?
Chairperson.
Honorable Manamiso.
Yes, thank you. I would like to suggest that perhaps while the advocate is still struggling, she can take us through because of we have received this document prior. Because time is not on our side, we must join the plenary later.
I really don't know as to what is happening because I'm trying and it's something that I have been doing to share presentations. I don't know what is happening right now and why is it not actually coming through. Can I just ask if I have been actually made to share the screen?
Yes, you have.
Yeah.
All right.
It's now coming. Yeah.
All right. Thank you so much, Chair. Is it already there?
Not showing, but just open up that file.
It is open already.
Something is not right. I don't know, maybe you can start like it has been proposed. Oh, is there now?
Yeah, it shows now.
Yeah.
All right, thank you. Let me minimize the screen. Chair, thank you so much and my apologies for the glitches that I have heard from my side. So the presentation basically is about us as we have received the invitation and we welcome the opportunity for us to present. And I would also like just to say that before I start with the presentation, that I'm coming in here wearing two hats, Chairperson. One, it is me representing the department. This is the letter was sent to our minister, and also then standing in as a chairperson for Pillar 3, Pillar 3, the NSP Pillar 3 Committee. And I would like just to say that I am not here alone. I am with the leadership of Pillar 3. We have here Ms. Ananisha Hendricks, who's the co-convener for Pillar 3 from the Legal Aid South Africa, and also accompanied by Ms. Francesca Fonse, who's representing WIN and is also the champion, the national champion for GBVF, for the Department of Justice and Constitutional Development. I also have Karine Hess, who is coming from Mosaic and also the member of Pillar 3, and I also have Jane Thomas, who is representing the board for the sheriffs, and Ms. Mantila, and above all, Ms. Mantila, who is the national registrar for sex offenders, and also Ms. Shoki Shabalala. As you know, that then the Department of Women is leading the coordination of the NSP Collaborative. So she is here from the Department of Women, Youth, Persons and Disabilities. So this is the rundown of the presentation that I will be making today, responding to the letter that we received. Now, as we know that in 2018, women marched and took to the streets, and one of the issues that they raised was that we know that we have brilliant pieces of legislation, but we are failing then to implement them. And this, we are also taking it from the criticism that we received some time ago from UN when they said to South Africa, you have globally competitive pieces of legislation. But one thing that you are failing in is that you are failing to bridge the gap between paper law and action. So the NSP then is representing the action for the country, being the giving the country agenda in issues that relate to how we should be addressing the issues of gender-based violence. Of course, drawing then its power from the presidential summit declaration against gender-based violence and femicide of 2019. So these are the pillars of the NSP, and the Department of Justice is heading the pillar three, that is for justice, safety, and protection. And I have said I am also the chairperson for that pillar. Now, we are here today to present on what is it that we have done to speed up the process for the implementation of these three amendment acts. As we know, as the Deputy Minister has also indicated, that the President assented to these bills on the 25th of January 22, and they were then gazetted on the 28th of January 2022. And so this is the Criminal Law, Sexual Offences and Related Matters Amendment Act of 2021. And with this one, it is a legislation that then is focusing mainly on the amendments of Chapter 6. And Chapter 6 deals with the National Register for Sex Offenders, it's because women marched and were saying that the National Register for Sex Offenders should be protecting everyone who is a victim of sex crimes, because currently it is protecting children and persons with mental disabilities. So now, the changes that have been made there, first is to say that every sex offender who has been convicted of a sex crime, his particulars must go straight to the register for sex offenders, irrespective of the age of the victim, of the mental status of the victim. And this is in response of the outcry of women in 2018. And it also then expanded the vulnerable persons, right, in terms of protection. Because the protection that it gives the chairperson is that when the particulars of a person have been entered in this register, what it says is that that person will not be able to work in an environment that will be giving him or her direct exposure to children and persons with mental disabilities. But now the Amendment Act expands that category to older persons and also to people who are in shelters, and as well as to women who are below the age of 25 years, who are in tertiary institutions, whether you are a student there or you are the lecturer. So you are protected in terms of the Amendment Act. So then we also have the Criminal and Related Matters Amendment Act. This is the one then that is dealing with the issues of bail, dealing with the issues of sentencing. As we know that there has been a huge outcry in terms of bail, that a person will be arrested today and tomorrow will be seen on the streets, walking on the streets. And the reason for that, mainly, Chairperson, is because that we have the Criminal Procedure Act. The Criminal Procedure Act then that permits then police to issue bail and also permitted the prosecution to issue bail before the person can actually appear before court. But now this amendment comes brilliant provision that says that now no more police bail in matters of GBVF, and also no more prosecution bail in matters of GBVF. And if a person then goes to court to apply for bail, then it must be the prosecution needs to give reasons if they are acceding with that application, and also making the consideration then of the issues of the victim, the protection, the risk factors, and so on, so that the voice of the victim is actually heard during the bail proceedings. And now the Domestic Violence Amendment Act, Chairperson of the Senate, it is one that came with a lot of changes, and one that is so brilliant is that it says that then there should be no base genderism in matters of gender-based violence, places then the responsibility, the accountability on every person who lives in South Africa, that you have the legal responsibility or the legal obligation to report an incident of domestic violence that has been perpetrated against a child, a person with disabilities, and also the older persons as well. So meaning that, and it also criminalizes then the failure thereof. So then it is both all of these three amendment acts, they are the encapsulation and they are also providing then acceding with the spirit of the Presidential Summit Declaration, that is Article 1 and Article 2 of the Presidential Summit Declaration, that promotes accountability to say that all persons living in South Africa must take the responsibility to end gender-based violence and femicide. So if you look at all these three amendment acts, they are towards the building a solid and seamless victim-centric criminal justice system in line with Article 5 of the Presidential Summit Declaration against GBVF of 2019. Now, something that is different that we have done, all right, this time, we have been, whenever we are talking about readiness, we will be looking at ourselves and consolidate and doing the coordination within government in terms of ensuring the readiness. But this time we've done it different. We are doing it with the civil society, because the Pillar 3 is a committee that is multi-sectoral. It does the representation and also the leadership of the civil society. So now this is a collaboration between government and legal and civil society organizations to ensure that we are ready, not only as government but also as a country. So what we have done then is Pillar 3, we have established that readiness war room, which is constituted by 8 working groups, and that also has the 8 coordinators that are leading those 8 working groups. And we also then we are a committee that has a representation here in this presentation is written plus 30 members, but I believe that now we have reached about 40 members. So we have the representation of the government stakeholders and also the CBOs being part of us. And what we are doing then, we are reporting to the NSP collaborative, which is led by the Department of Women, and also the consolidation of those reports being done by DPME, and all those reports then getting to the president. So these at the bottom there, these are all the stakeholders that are part of Pillar 3. And these, I would also like to say that these are the stakeholders we have the representation of reputable NGOs, Mosaic, WIN, Masibambane, Child Witness Institute, Women's Legal Center, and also the Rape Crisis, as well as the SAULA is part of us. Now, these are the groups then that I will be giving here the report of the work that they have done. So it's 8 working groups as you are seeing them there on the screen. Now, this is the plan. The plan that we put together is Pillar 3. And it is the plan then that I will be presenting according to the work that has been done, BEAR Working Group. So now I will be starting then with the Domestic Violence Amendment Act. and now looking into the work that has been done thus far as planned by the alignment, by the group responsible for the alignment of the regulations and national directives and national instructions. As you know, that the Domestic Violence Act also provides regulations, as well as then the NRSO, it also has a chapter, it also has regulations on its own within the criminal law, Sexual Offences and Related Matters Amendment Act. So now we have then to amend the regulations, and this exercise, it is an exercise that is led by the Department of Justice, and it co-led actually by the Department of Justice, as well as the Legal Aid South Africa. So what we have done, the amendments for the regulations for the domestic violence have been already been done, Chairperson, and it is an exercise that has been done jointly as well with the judiciary. So we already have a draft regulation for the Domestic Violence Amendment Act, Domestic Violence Amendment Act. Then we have within the Domestic Violence Amendment Act, there's a provision there, Chairperson, that then is responding to the call by women of South Africa to say that we need to be represented by Legal Aid South Africa in these matters, particularly also including the issues of divorce and so on, because those are the ramifications of violence within domestic relationship. So now the Legal Aid South Africa has amended, has reviewed their legal aid regulations. And this is something that they've already worked on. They've reported to us in Pillar 3 to say that the Legal Aid Board has actually approved the amendments that they have done to their legal aid regulations. So the third then is then we have to, the Domestic Violence Act, as it stands now, it requires the NPA to develop the national directives. So now the NPA had the responsibility of amending, aligning the existing national directives to the Amendment Act. So this is the work that the NPA has also done. And you are looking there are timelines that are set there in terms of the plan that has been put together by Pillar 3, that by the 31st of July 2022, all of these must be done. Now, coming into the directives, then we have a provision within the Act that says that then all those that are expected then to amend their directives and the national instructions, they must do it then within a period of 12 months, counted from the date of assent. So the date of assent is the 25th of January. So, but then we have given them up to the 24th of January. But I would like to say, Chairperson, that to ensure that this work is quickly done as a committee, that is Pillar 3 committee, we have also reduced that time to say that 31st December, all these stakeholders that are tasked to amend their directives and the national instructions as such, they must do so, not later than the 31st of December, but in the plan, it is the 24th of January 2023. So now moving then to the national directives for the different stakeholders that I knew, the Domestic Violence Amendment Act has increased the spectrum of the stakeholders that must be responsible for the implementation of this legislation. And this is one of the issues that are in response to the call made during the presidential summit in 2018. Now, we have included now DSD.
Recording
of in progress. Victimization that many of the victims experience when they get to our service points. So now we have also, Chairperson, as Pillar 3, made a resolution that we need to develop the minimum norms and standards for the equitable provision of services to survivors of gender-based violence and femicide, to specifically improve access to prosecution and services. This is the responsibility that we have given to NPA, working very closely with the Department of Social Development, as well as said, as a committee, it must be produced and finalized by the end of this financial year. Now, I'm going to be now reporting on the work that is done, finalizing this work that is done by the same working group now in terms of the implementation of the Criminal Law, Sexual Offences and Related Matters Amendment Act of 2021. Now, the Act, Chairperson, it makes that is the principal act. It does provide, as I've said, the regulations of an NRSO. So what it meant then, the department had a task then of aligning the existing regulations with the Amendment Act. This work, Chairperson, it has already been done. There's a draft that is there. You will see at a later stage the slide that we'll be talking to the milestones that we have achieved. In Parliament, and also hanging fruit for us as the Department of Justice, and also as Pillar 3 as a committee, to ensure that then we are speeding up the readiness in the implementation of these three amendment acts. So the national directives as well for sexual offences, which are for the NPA, the Act already, the Principal Act, makes a provision for the national directives in the same way as with the domestic violence. So prosecutors, they have the national directives. So right now, they have to align them with the Amendment Act. There's a draft already that they have produced, and the same applies to the Department of Health. Health. And the deadline for that in terms of the Act, it is the 24th of January 2023, that these directives must be tabled in Parliament by that time. And so the same applies to the national instructions on sexual offences, which goes then to the police, giving them the guidelines as to what is it that they need to do in order to address and manage the cases of sexual offences. So they have to table their national instructions by the end of the 24th of before the 24th of January 2023. Now, we have also, Chairperson, looking now into the scope of the National Register for Sex Offenders, we decided as a department that we decentralize the services of the National Register for Sex Offenders, because one of them is it must issue certificates of clearance to persons who are applying for jobs that will be exposing them to the category of vulnerable persons, who are children, persons with mental disability, persons with sensory disability, physical disability, mental and also persons, the people who are in shelters, and the lecturers who are below the age of 25 years, and also students who are in tertiary institutions but below the age of 25, who are women. So with that, then so everyone will be applying for a job at those spaces must have the employer. It says that the employer must apply for the clearance certificates to the National Register, and also then even the person who is making the application needs also to apply to the National Register for Sex Offender to check whether is my name cleared so that he can get the certificate from the register before he gets the appointment. But this is not only for those who are getting into those spaces, but also for those who are already there, because in terms of this provision, what it says is that even the ones who are already in the employ, the employer must have them cleared against the National Register for Sex Offenders. And if your name has been found to be in the register, so what the Act says is that your employer must fire you or must look for a space in the employment space where then you will be working in a space that will not be giving you access to the categories of the vulnerable persons that I've just mentioned. So then this is going to be huge work, Chairperson. So now we are saying that we need to localize the implementation of this Act, and now we're going to be making it possible then for the court, for the person now to go straight to our courts and make that application. And not only there, but also to make it online, as you're going to be seeing in the presentation. So now, there's a development of a document, the service decentralization delivery model for certain services of the National Register for Sex Offenders that is intended then to decentralize these services to our courts. And it must be finalized and adopted by all the stakeholders, including the civil society, by the 31st of July, 2022. And also we have put together another working group right now, which is headed by the NPA. This one is responsible for the alignment of the charge sheet annexures to the Amendment Act. And because we have these three Amendment Acts are also creating new crimes. So it is the responsibility then of the NPA, as the Criminal Procedure Act requires them to take the responsibility of putting charges then to the accused person and formulating those charges. So now they are working very closely with the judiciary to ensure that then they put together the annexures that will be responding then to the three amendment acts. So they've already put together then the draft document for this exercise. Now I'm moving then to the third working group, which is the responsible for the systems upgrade. All right, so this is the one that is looking then into the development of ensuring that then we increase the accessibility of services of justice services to our people. So the first thing that this group then is responsible for is to upgrade the electronic register for sex offenders by including the additional data metrics for the vulnerable persons. As you know that we were not collecting data previously for the NRSO of older persons and students who are in tertiary institutions within, you know, the bar, the age bar that has been set, and also and persons who are in shelters. So now we have to have that information, and we're going to be using then the charge sheets. Charge sheets will be our main data source. So that group that is responsible for the amendment of the charge sheet is working very closely then with the systems upgrade working group. And this one then will be injecting then all those data metrics into the NRSO register, because the NRSO register is electronic at Chairperson in terms of the Act. So the next thing, so this is the work that they must do and finalize before the end of the 31st of July. They've already presented the draft work that they have done at Chairperson. So there's so much work that is already done there. So the second thing that they are doing, they are aligning then the integrated case management system of the criminal module. We have the ICE, we call it the ICM. Us in the department, where then all the cases all the criminal cases, is a portal of all the criminal cases of all the courts that are in South Africa, where then they are managed in terms of so as to give us as a department to help us then to make proper decisions and policy directions. So then this one now, it needs to be amended so that it incorporates the new crimes that have been created by the three Amendment Act. So it is a team that is also working with the NPA and the judiciary, as well as SAPS as well, is part of that team. And they have a responsibility of finalizing that work before the end of July 2022, because this is the work that they started doing last year, that is in the previous financial year. So now they are getting to the end of that work. But I would like also to say that there has been a delay then in the work of this team because of the malware attack that the department experienced. So it's sort of then presented certain glitches in their work and so on. But they are moving with strides in terms of analyzing it, because we gave them the deadline of the 31st of July 2022. So it's also the team that is responsible for the development of the SMS notification system for the services of the Office of the National Register for Sex Offenders. So that then this is the SMS notification system must be in line with the Amendment Act. So they've already produced that SMS notification system application for the NRSO. So now they're at the stage then of piloting it, and we have given them up to the 30th of June to be finalized with their pilot and ensure that it is ready to kick in. And they are also responsible then for the integration of the systems between DOJ, SAPS, DSD, DCE, I mean DCS, and also the Department of Home Affairs and the Department of Health. And these, the chairperson, are the departments that are the data sources for the NRSO. So now we want them to, all of them, to engage in the IJS, the transversal hub, where then it's going to be easy for the NRSO to get all the information that it needs. When the NRSO is sitting there and it is sitting with an application for clearance certificate, it needs to get that information very quickly from the information, from the data, from SAPS. And if then there is somebody who's entering the country who is a sex offender in that country, registered in that country as a sex offender, so the NRSO must be able to get that information from the Department of Home Affairs. And DCS then, they are responsible for the provision of the historic data, and as well as SAPS is responsible for the provision of historic data. And the DSD has been also been put in because they have a register for child protection. So then we need then to find a point of integration between these two registers. So this is the work that is led by IJS. So then, because it has a lot of the departments put together, so there we have given them the deadline of the 31st of March 2024. And the NRSO also, in terms of the Act, must issue the clearance certificates within 10 working days. So now they've started to do that, and the target that has been set for them is that 65% of all the applications that they have received must be finalized within 10 working days. And this is one indicator that falls within Pillar 3, and so it is also monitored then by Pillar 3. Now, moving to the Domestic Violence Amendment Act, in terms of the same working group, so they are responsible for the development of the online application for protection, for the domestic violence protection orders, in line with the Domestic Violence Amendment Act. As you know, Chairperson, that this act also now allows for people then to access our court services online. So now the online application or the online web portal has already been developed. It's a responsibility of the DOJ. It has already been presented to us as Pillar 3 and already been adopted. And so as a department, then we are saying that we are committing that 30% of the lower courts will be using the online services before the end of that is in this financial year, that is before the end of 31st March 2023. But then we are also looking at the possibilities of rolling it throughout the courts, but this is the indicator that we are working on right now. And they also have then the responsibility, this working team, of developing the integrated electronic repository for protection orders. And this then is a provision, a chairperson, that is primarily intended to prevent and curb the dual applications that one will find in the court, because what will happen is that you will find in instances where people who are sharing residence, all right, each of them will be having a protection order against each other. So now, and the reason for that, it is because the provision that speaks to jurisdiction in terms of the domestic violence is quite broad, because we want to increase access to these services. So then a person who can apply for a protection order in a court where he or she is working, okay, or running a business, or a person can apply for a protection order in a court where the residence is situated. So meaning that then there are a number of courts in the country that will have the jurisdiction to attend to this person. So what is happening right now is that a person, the respondent, that is the abuser, will be served with the protection order and then go to another court that is jurisdiction, maybe the court where he's running the business at, and apply for a protection order against the same victim. So now the repository will be helping us then to manage those incidents as well as the counter applications as well that we also experience, that a person will get a protection order and apply and for another a protection order against the same person, which would be a counter application. So we want them to have a portal that will be managing those systems. So it's going to be an integrated repository. So it's managed then by IGS, working with the Department of Justice. So we have spoken to IGS, and I believe they are also in the platform here. So they said that for them to be able then to finalize this, they will need then all these stakeholders that are responsible for this to have then their systems intact. So they've requested for 12 months to do that work. Mm-hmm. So this is the integrated justice system transversal hub. So the departments that are relevant then for the integrated electronic repository for the protection order, it is SAPS, it is the Department of Social Development, it is also the NPA, as well as the Department of Justice being the key and the lead department in this process. So now the IJS, now using this hub, will be able then to develop that repository. But now they want all of us to be able to have those dedicated systems. So currently, what they have reported to me, Chairperson, is that we have you, DOJ, as having a system that is dedicated for the collection of domestic violence matters. And we also have a SAPS to a certain extent. So a social development will have to have their system, as well as the NPA then working with us as the Department of Justice. So that's the process then that is unfolding right now, so as to develop that repository. Now, moving further, Chairperson, we have the Domestic Violence Act right now. It has a provision that permits the victim of domestic violence to apply for a protection order outside the court hours and also outside the court days. This is a provision, Chairperson, that as a department we have been struggling to implement. And so it is still there in the Amendment Act. But now, with us having the online application for the protection order, now we have decided to find a way of responding to this act. And it's a huge gap in the implementation process in terms of us as a department. So now we talked with IJS. IJS has already established or developed the PCM mobile app, which is already implemented in child justice matters and is running, and it's an innovation that they are doing with social development. So we look at that model and we found that it's a model that we could also use and migrate in domestic violence matters. And they said to us that the platform is already there. The solution is already there. So it is a matter of making it then to speak to the issues of domestic violence. So what is going to happen then is that a victim who is applying online for the protection order, that is after hours and also after in outside of the court days, will, as soon as the application is made and sent, then it will send an SMS alert of the online application to the clerk of the court who is on duty during that time, and the magistrate as well who is on call during that time. So as soon as they get the SMS alert, then there will be a push notification that will be sending the email or the SMS to the device that has been used by the applicant. And then the process then of the application will begin to be processed by the clerk of the court, working with the magistrate who is on call, and the application will be considered by the magistrate, and then the magistrate will make a decision whether to grant or not to grant the protection order based on the information that is in the affidavit, and that protection order will be issued online, and the victim will be receiving the protection order in the device that he or she used when applying for the protection order. So this is what then we are going to be introducing. And IJS has said to us that since the platform is already there, it's not a matter that's going to be a problem for us to execute. Now, I am moving to the last act now, which is the Criminal and Related Matters Amendment Act, which is the one that talks to the bail matters, and also increasing the sentencing and also introducing the intermediary services. Currently, the intermediary services, Chairperson, are offered to children and to persons with mental disabilities in terms of the Criminal Procedure Act, that is Section 170, Capital A. And also, there's a provision in the Children's Act that also requires the use of the intermediary services. So the older persons sector approach the department to say that we also need intermediary services, because when we go to court, sometimes we don't understand the processes and so on. So we need then the intermediary to be a conduit between us and the court, and to be able then to make then the test, to provide the testimony in a private testifying room, and not having the direct access access to the accused person. So we have responded to that. So now, in terms of this act, now the intermediary services are extended to older persons and also to civil proceedings. And the reason for us to extend them to civil proceedings is because the domestic violence the Domestic Violence Act provides civil proceedings and also criminal proceedings, that when you are applying for the protection order, you are making a civil application. And when the protection order has been violated, it becomes a criminal matter. So then we want also the same act as well, Chairperson, it makes then a provision for a child to make an application for a protection order. And it says that the child may make the application unassisted or assisted. So meaning that the reason for the act then to recognize children, to give them, to permit them to make that application, it is because of the fact that some children are violated by their guardians, by their parents. So then the act says that they can actually go to court and make the application unassisted. So they will need the intermediary services during that time, because it is a civil application. So now we have extended that scope then to intermediaries and to children as well. Now we had to amend the determination of categories of the appointment for the appointment of the competent persons as intermediaries. So this is the work that has been done, and the Gazette notice, I'll be giving you the feedback on that shortly. But then this is the work that must be finalized before the end of the 31st of July, before 31st of July 2022. We have also then asked the Rules Board to set the tariffs for the employment of the ad hoc intermediaries. And this then is just one way as us as government to say that we need to alleviate the pressure that the country has on unemployment, because with this now, it is an opportunity for the social workers who are not in the government employ, as well as other persons, the retired teachers and so that they are able then to get jobs. So then the Rules Board then it will be is setting the tariffs. This is the task that they've already started, Chairperson, to determine the tariffs that will be given to those people. And we have given them the deadline of the 31st of July, and they are working very closely with the Department of Justice. And as a department, we have also now started then to conduct then the audit of the resource capacity of the intermediaries needed for the implementation of this Amendment Act. This work is done by the working group that is responsible for the intermediary services and is led by the Department of Justice, working with the judiciary and also the Department of Social Development and the DBE as well. So with this one, then there's a phase one of the audit has already been done, and phase one is looking then inwardly in terms of how many intermediaries do we have, all right? And because we have lost some of the intermediaries that succumbed to COVID-19, and others have left the department to greener pastures. So now we had to have that audit being done, and we found that we have a capacity of 156 intermediaries in our system. So now we are moving to phase two. Phase two is about how many intermediaries that we will need now that the scope of the services has been expanded by this act. So this is the exercise that is done by our HR in the department. Now, we have also then, we have to implement the electronic intermediary diary booking system. This is part of the plan. And this is it's an ongoing activity. So we develop an intermediary diary booking system, Chairperson. And the reason for that is because we found as a department that we don't have enough capacity of the intermediaries. So we had found a way of ensuring that this service is shared throughout the country so that an intermediary who is needed in another province will be able then through the system to be booked and to go to that province to go and provide those services. Because the issue of languages is very important with the intermediaries, because you will find that then there will be a child who will be speaking Tswana. In the Eastern Cape. And in the Eastern Cape, usually you find that the intermediaries that are there predominantly speak Xhosa. So what will be needed then, that through this system, that will be, then the application will be done by the prosecutor to say that I need this intermediary that will be speaking Tswana in a Xhosa environment. So then the court manager who is in Pretoria must be able to provide those services. And now we are also ensuring that we also use the Zoom so that these services are also easy to be accessible instead of having that intermediary traveling to that point. So this is the system that is intended to do that. And the other thing that we are doing then, this is then the service delivery model for the decentralization. It needs to be done, this one is for, and for the NRSO, I think I have already spoken about this one. Now, moving to the other working group, which is for the parole, and in terms of the Criminal and Related Matters Amendment Act, there's a provision there which is responding then to the demand made by the women in 2018 to say that during parole proceedings, the victim sometimes it does not feature, and that is so unfair. So now in terms of this amendment, it says that the parole proceedings must be victim-centric. The voice of the victim must be heard. The victim must be contacted when there will be the parole proceedings or the parole application by the convict. And secondly, then also the victim must participate in those parole proceedings. So now DCS is leading that working group, where then they are amending their policy framework. And so it's work that we have given them up to the 31st of July, that they are done with it. They already have the policy framework, so it's a matter of just amending it. And they've done some work in this area. And now I'm going to be moving then to the third last working group that is dealing with training. So this is the committee, this is the working group that is very critical. It is led by the Department of Justice, and it is constituted by all the departments, because training means that it must be done by all the departments that are responsible for the implementations of these three amendment acts. So we are requiring them to amend the existing learning material and also to provide training prior to the implementation of these, prior to the commencement, to the commencement date of the implementation of this act, and the training must be ongoing. So we have said that each stakeholder must deliver a minimum of 20 sessions before the implementation date. So I mean the commencement date. So this is the work that I'm going to be also be giving you a report as to where we are in terms of doing this. Now then I'm moving to the next working group, which is responsible for media and public communication. This is a working group that is co-led by Department of Justice and GCIS. They've already developed the plan. And last week we had, I also attended as a chairperson, they are working a session where then they were, because it's a working session that also includes the civil society organizations as well, because because we are doing it together with them. So now the working plan is there, but it's diversified, Chairperson. It goes to the woman and the man walking on the streets, and it also has it focuses also on different media platforms, and as particularly in the areas where you find that youth uses mostly, that is WhatsApp groups. There will be messages that will be coming through WhatsApp groups and WhatsApp platforms, not groups, as well as social media and so and it is also focusing on language accessibility, disability accessibility, and also age accessibility as well. So those are the areas that they are focusing on in terms of developing then their products and also their material to ensure that then the messages go throughout. So we have already started with this implementing this plan by going out to different provinces, and our minister as well has been holding imbizos to, and also the deputy minister as well, you know, in the imbizos where they are sensitizing the people about the 3 GBVF, I mean GBV Amendment Acts. And I was also chairperson also in the Mpumalanga, invited by the office of the premier in Mpumalanga, and the reason for the invitation is because they wanted a presentation on the 3 GBV Amendment Act and also the plan, because they want as a province to start developing their implementation plan to ensure the readiness for the implementation of these 3 Amendment Acts. So the third committee, this working group, is dealing with costing. So we have to ensure that we cost these 3 Amendment Acts, and we have to take a different approach this time in terms of costing, because this is one area that I believe, the Chairperson, it impacts heavily and mostly adversely against the implementation process. Why? It is because we find that we have budgeted less for the implementation, and then that translate into poor implementation. So now the approach that we are taking now is that it must be the provision to provision analysis for costing. So each provision, what we are saying is that we are analyzing the provision to say that what does it require? What are the services that must be provided to achieve it? What is the training? What are the skills that are required in order to achieve these services? And do we have enough capacity to provide those services? So each and every stakeholder that is responsible for the implementation of that provision needs to provide us with the services, I mean with the resources, and we cost them the existing resources and how many people will be required and how many resources, even the physical resources that will be needed for us then to implement each and every provision that has been introduced by the Amendment Act, particularly the Domestic Violence Amendment Act, because Chairperson, I would like just to be open about this, to say that the Domestic Violence Act was never costed. So now it is one act. Me as a Chairperson of Pillar 3, I am committed in ensuring that that act is properly costed, so that we improve the implementation thereof. Now, the milestones have already, as I was giving the plan, you know, touched on them, but I would like just to say just a few. The draft regulations, coming to the regulations, in terms of the act says that the amendment act says that the regulations must be tabled in parliament before the 24th of January. That is, it counts 12 months from the date of assent. So the date of assent was the 25th of January 2022. So meaning that if you are counting it then by the 24th of January 2023, then these acts these regulations must be tabled in Parliament together with the directives and the national instructions. But as a committee chairperson, we said that no, we want to speed up the implementation. All right, we want the commencement date to be set before the end of the 31st of July 2022. And this is something that has never been done. It is just the preeminence that we have injected in this work to ensure that then, because women, people walking on the streets, they do not know all these processes. All that they are saying is that I want my case to be dealt with. I want to get, the criminal justice system to respond to my matter. So it's not to my matter. It's not a matter of all these processes that we are having. So now we have cut down time, and this, as I have said initially, that it's something that has never been done before, Chairperson, to be ready to have the commencement date set within a period of 5 months. Never been done, even for one act. But now we are taking three acts and we are combining them to ensure that the commencement date is done within a period of 5 months. So we have given them this department, the Department of Justice, because this is the Department of Justice that must put together the regulations. So they've already done that. So now they are ready to be considered by the minister. And the minister then has been given a period of just year in June to ensure that then he approves then the regulations. And then after that, there will be a gazetted and the input that will be coming. But before, we are not expecting a lot of input that will be coming from the general public, because the process of the amendment of the regulations was done with the civil society participating in those exercises. Task teams that were put by the department included then the civil society organizations as well. The amendment to the determination of the categories of competent persons to be appointed as intermediaries, the gazette notice already published, and the closing date was the 13th of May. So now the department is considering the inputs that have been received so as to have then the final product being approved by the president, by the minister. And this, they will be done. They have given me their word to say that 30th June, praise, will be done with this assignment. Now, coming to the NPA produced the amendment, the draft amendment to the national directives for domestic violence and also for the sexual offences. We are waiting as Pillar 3 committee for them to present these documents to us. And also, Department of Justice already drafted the service decentralization delivery model of certain NRSO services that will be decentralized to the courts, to our courts, so as to increase accessibility of these services at local level. So now this document already drafted, but will need to be presented before the Pillar 3 committee so that the NGOs are also aware of what is incorporated there. Now, this is just the rundown, a quick of the milestones, as some I have mentioned. The draft amendment of the annexures to the charge sheet, NPA developed them. But now there are two task teams that are working on, two teams rather working on this exercise, Chairperson. There is one task team that I am chairing, which has the NPA and the judiciary. And also the ISM, the team that is responsible for the upgrading of the system. So there, that is the team that will be taking a microscopic approach on every word that is in that annexure so as to ensure the complete compliance with the legislation. And then this team then will take this work to Pillar 3. So the amendment is already done. I was talking to the NPA people yesterday. They said to me that the draft is already done and they will be presenting that to Pillar 3. Now, the systems is that one that I've already talked about, that the online web portal for the domestic violence protection already developed the chairperson. And I would also like to say that it also gives access to the attorneys. Attorneys will be able to make applications online for their clients, on behalf of their clients. And also the third party applicants, people who have material interest in the well-being of the complainant will also be able to do so. So meaning that even you, chairperson, if your sister is a victim of domestic violence, you can, with the permission of your sister, actually make that application online, sitting in your office, and you don't have to go and chew and end. So it also gives access also to the civil society organization, particularly those ones who are actually the mosaic, who are based in our courts, and they will be able then to make applications. So this web portal, the online web portal solution has already been adopted, as I said, that by Pillar 3, and Mosaic volunteered then to have it piloted with them, and the representative of Mosaic that is Karen is also in this platform to confirm that. So the SMS notification system in domestic violence matters already rolled out throughout the courts that we have, and this is to ensure that we keep the victim updated of whatever that is happening in their cases, because frustrations come when victims do not know what is happening with their cases. So now we are trying then to stop that with having that constant communication with them. Now the online SMS notification for the NRSO services has also been developed, and so they already have it, and now they are in a process of testing it with Churo. The Churo has volunteered, all right, to be at the testing ground for this system, and the reason for that is because they have already vetted all their educators. All right, and they started that process 2 years ago, you know, to send their applications for their educators to be vetted. So now they have volunteered then to have the SMS notification system being tested with them, and also not only the SMS notification but also the online application for the NRSO services as well. So it will be tested at their platform. Now the intermediary services, I've already given the information there as where we are. Now, coming to the alignment of the training material, Chairperson, this is one working group that we need to intensify our oversight, because not all the departments have finalized the amendment of their training material. Thus far, it is the Justice College, that is for the Department of Justice, they've already amended and aligned their training material on domestic violence with the Amendment Act, and the sexual offenses training material for the clerks of the court with the Amendment Act is done. And they are already, they started to that is with us. I'm not supposed to be saying they, but I said that I have come here with two heads. So the implementation of that training started last year, Chairperson. So they are rolling it out already. And so is the NPA as well. The NPA has already amended their sexual offenses training material, and now they are already rolling it out. And so they have to table it in Parliament because they are required by the Act to do so. So we need then to put a lot of energy and a focus in this working group, because we want the learning material first to be not only amended, the amendment must also review the compliance, all right, with the existing Act and also the Amendment Act, so as to ensure does it have the capability to develop the skills that we need? That is the first thing. And secondly, does it have the element of social context that will be helping then people, particularly who are at the front desk and service points, to be able to understand the dynamics that the victim is bringing when it comes to the service points, all right? So as to eliminate the incidence of secondary victimization. So we want those learning materials to have all of that, and this will be tested. And I would also like to say that Mosaic also volunteered then to work with this team so as to ensure, because they have been delivering a training on domestic violence and others. So this is just one area that I think that we are still lagging behind, and me as a chairperson, I'm not really happy with the pace that we have been taking. But then we said that 31st July, they must develop, finalize their training material and also implement the training. Now, this is now the limitations and the takeaways that I would like then the caucus to move with. The first is to say, as a takeaway, it's a commitment that we are making. And I would like then to say that it's something that is, we are following suit the steps that were taken by Parliament. And as women of South Africa, we are standing in awe of what the Parliament did. Within a period of 12 months, Parliament was done consideration, approval of not one amendment act, one bill, but three bills. Something that has never been done by this government. So it's something that we are appreciating. And one thing that women would think is that when you get into the government employ, you are not an activist. As I am presenting here, I'm an activist for women. And so we do this work knowing that if we fail, posterity will judge us. So we want to move with the same speed. The record that has been set by Parliament, we must also see if we cannot break it. So we are saying that within a period of five months, we must be done with the readiness. And these three amendment acts must be implemented. And we are giving that the end of 30th, the end of July 2022. This is the takeaway that I'm giving to this caucus. And then secondly, is that we have done something that is different as a takeaway. Different. We have never as government, when we are doing the readiness for the implementation, done it with civil society. But right now, moving with the spirit of the Presidential Summit Declaration that says that all of us, we need to take a country approach, all right, a country accountability to the issues of gender-based violence and femicide. So a move from operating in silos. So we need to move from saying that we are government and you are others and you are the civil society. So now it is civil society working with government, creating that collaborative to ensure that there's readiness. So this readiness, it is not only for us, it's for everybody who is in our country with the service of civil society representation. That's the second takeaway. And the third one then, Chairperson, is to say that we now coming to the limitations. First limitation is to say that with costing being in progress, we need the support of the caucus in terms of ensuring that there is enough budget that is provided by, you know, National Treasury for the implementation of these three acts. We need to do so. So with the permission of the chairperson, we are willing to come back to say that this is the costing document. This is how it is for each and every of the three amendment acts. And currently, what we are saying that is that the budget is not enough, chairperson, is not enough. And we also need to ensure that there is also some kind of something that the Department of Women is working on to ensure that there's a purse that is there for the civil society organization. Because if we say that, we are all accountable. So what it means is that as government, we need to find ways of also funding the civil society. So this is what we are coming with to say that we need the support of the caucus in this area. Now, the second limitation is the one of the electronic repository for the domestic violence for the protection orders. As I said, Chairperson, that I talked with IJS, and they said to me that we need to have systems in place. And they said to me, Chairperson, that even with your system as justice, after they had the malware attack, you need to have to create a level of stability in your integrated case management system for domestic violence. So they said that they need 12 months. So now we're going to be making this proposal, Chairperson, to request then that let this provision not stop us from having the date of commencement, suggesting that the date of commencement to be the 31st of July. All right. So let this provision then be deferred to the end of the next financial year. All right. So that then we give IJS, working with all those stakeholders, to develop the electronic. But they gave me their word to say that with the transversal hub being in existence, they will be able to assist us. And I checked it with them even yesterday. I called the head of the IJS to say that, are you sure that you need 12 months? So he said to me that he's giving me the guarantee of 12 months. And the other limitation, which I am really, really, really concerned with as an activist, is that with the Department of Justice has inadequate numerical capacity of the intermediaries. And so we need to close this resource gap. And with the Criminal and Related Matters Amendment Act now expanding the scope of these services to civil applications, good with civil applications. We are happy with that. And also with to older persons as well. But the issue of the resource gap is still a problem. So, but we are hoping that with the work that we have asked the rules board to help us with to develop the tariffs and set them at marketable rates. So we are hoping that for the ad hoc intermediaries that will be able then to draw people from the civil society organization and the retired educators. It's a wide spectrum of people who can provide those services. And I would also like to say that for them to be able to do that, then the judiciary will have to test them. There will be an inquiry that will be conducted by the judiciary to check the competence for that person to be able then to provide those services in that particular court. So that is also another limitation that I am bringing here. And the other one then is something that I have mentioned is that the directives is just the takeaway that one to say that please let the members of the caucus take note of the fact that the development of the regulations, of the directives, the tabling thereof, of the the regulations, directives, the national instructions, they have a space of 12 months to finalize that work from the date of assent, which was the 25th of January 2022. But the regulations, we have shortened that time, and the Department of Justice has responded positively to finalize that work before the end of July 2022. But I just want to have that take, to mention it as a takeaway that there's still there's grace that is there already for them to finalize. That is the different stakeholders that are expected to do that. And so, Chairperson, this is my I've reached the end of the presentation, and we are then willing to take questions from the caucus, and as the leadership of the Pillar 3 a committee, as well as I think the Department of Women is also here. Thank you so much, Chairperson.
Thank you so much, Advocate. Oh, you can say ntirho lowu mi nga ku endleni a hi na marito yo ringana cancer commitment ya n'wina our activist honorable members we have received the briefing from the department. We now know what is happening in there. The rundown of the NSP pillars, the 3GBV Amendment Act, the readiness oversight architect, the plan for readiness to implement the 3GBV amendment, the milestones achieved thus far, the limitations, and the takeaways. Thank you so much, Advocate. You know, I like also the confidence that you are displaying when giving this update or the report. I wish we can have 4 or 5 officials or activists like you did mention in other departments. And I believe it can take our country somewhere. Thank you very much. Honorable members, now is the time for discussion, for clarity seeking questions, and also the time to make inputs. Can I have hands? I can see there is Honorable Mutapo, Honorable Mananiso, Honorable Velma, Honorable Magdalene. I don't know whether it's Mashlewa. The gadget is
yes, it's Mashlewa.
Oh, thank you, ma. Honorable Ngwenya. These are the 5 hands that I see of Honorable Sam Calvage, Honorable Sylvia Lucas, and then, yes, the 7 hands for now. In that order, please. Honorable Mutapo, you can start. Hoshihadi Mutapo, you can start.
Okay, thank you. Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson. Honorable Speaker, Chief Whip, Deputy Chief Whip, ministers present in this virtual meeting, and colleagues, let me start, Chairperson, by welcoming and appreciating the presentation by Advocate Praise Nkambule. It was so insightful, Honorable Chairperson. And again, also the opening remarks you made, Chairperson, very much informative and progressive. Chairperson, mine is just an input in respect of what Advocate Praise Nkambule has just presented. More especially that he's aware that he was leading the training of royalty, traditional leaders from National House of Traditional Leaders in the project in Ndabezitha on domestic violence. So when she was mentioning the working group, she made mention of the first one of NSP Collaborative. I'm proposing that as part of that group, we have traditional leader structures such as National House of Traditional Leaders and Contra Lesa in that group. That's my humble submission, Chairperson. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honorable Mutapu. Honorable Mananiso.
Thank you, Chairperson. Let me start by actually welcoming the report and good morning to everybody on the platform. And I must say, indeed, Advocate, she is actually giving us hope the way she presents on these issues. However, Chair, one would want to just caution that as this particular caucus, we must take note that we are the voice of the voiceless, male and females, and other genders. I would like just to as well welcome the fact that in this particular presentation, we can see that all these working groups have went to a length of understanding that they need each other to actually address our issues on a speedily pace. So I want to applaud the fact that this is an integrated plan that seeks to address this issue of gender-based violence and femicide. I'm welcoming as well the issue of digital technologies that will be employed to make sure that issues are responded as it when they arise. And this would be able to actually assist those who've been, who have lost hope into our system that are, you can report a case and you would not never get any response anytime. So at least this one will alleviate fear from those that have actually, you know, been repetitive victims from this particular system of ours. And I'm happy as well that on their presentation, they are touching on issues of localization, issues of decentralizing services to the communities where things are happening. It's something that one wants to applaud and want to say to them as well, they need to work with district municipalities to make sure that they actually understand this particular context that we are talking about. Chairperson, on slide 11 on issues of intermediaries, one would want to say to Advocate, I would want to lobby that as the process unfolds, perhaps they need to as well identify those young people who are qualified in specific fields of law, not only focus mostly on those who have been retired. COVID has showed us to say 60 plus, at some point they must go and rest. So at least they need to make sure that I want to lobby for young people to be mainstreamed as well in this particular opportunity, and as well people with disability, LGBTIQA plus society, and other vulnerable groups to be included when this particular opportunity arises. On slide 6, ma'am, I just want to say to the team, I believe that there's something that they are not doing it right in terms of communicating this good story. The media and public communication must ensure that on daily basis, they give brief to the society up until to the grassroots in terms of where we are with regards to the NSP. Because the more we speak about these issues on a higher level and not, you know, making them our day-to-day issues of agendas, we seek to leave other people behind. So it is important that they strengthen how they communicate with everybody with regards to the NSP. And one would want to advocate that there should be no information that goes out without 11 languages and as well, including those with Braille, so that we don't leave people behind, as the president has alluded. And Chair, I welcome this particular presentation with both hands, and I hope that they would stick to their timeframes as presented today. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you very much, Honorable Mananiso, for your input. Honorable Drucken.
Thank you very much, Chair. All my devices are failing me, so I hope you can see me on the screen. Good morning to everybody on the platform, Deputy Ministers, Ministers, Chief Whips, all who are present. Good morning. Thank you very much to Advocate Kambula for her presentation. In terms of, and also thank you to the team that's working under Pillar 3 that is pushing this work forward. For there are women and children who are vulnerable, who are voiceless, and you are working for them, and we are grateful for that. I have a few questions. When all of this is ready, how will the awareness be done to the local areas or to the grassroots levels so that women, children, all the people can understand these three acts and the impact that these acts will have to improve people's lives? So what is the awareness plan of when everything is ready? And then on one of your slides, you've got your stakeholders at the bottom of the slide. But I see no organizations of people with disabilities. So I would like to know, how do you ensure that people with disabilities have full access to the work that you're doing and getting their advice? Then when I read the newspapers or when I see TV, I see alarming, increasing rates of violence against women, against children, and especially in the schools and in the universities. So, you know, it's alleged violence or sexual abuse or rape, but the perpetrators are still out there. They're still working in the schools. They're still in the universities. Nothing is done about them. So I would like to know if higher education, basic education, what is their involvement in this process? Because, like you say, we want to avoid secondary trauma for the victims and the survivors. So, but we see, they have to see the perpetrators every day in their environments. What is being done about that? And then I am happy that you said that the victims should be involved in the parole proceedings. So I'm happy to hear that, because we've received complaints that the victims don't know when their perpetrators are out, and then they just, so then when the victims go to SAPS and say that they did not get this information, SAPS says, no, well, it's not their responsibility because it's under DCS, because sometimes SAPS themselves don't know that a perpetrator has been released on parole. So we need more victim empowerment in the parole proceedings. And I am also happy one of the honorable members has mentioned access for people with disabilities. I would also like to request that if you can investigate There are deaf social auxiliary workers. They are qualified, and they can assist or be trained as intermediaries. If you can work, especially with deaf, sir, they are there in the regions and in the provinces. There are social workers who are deaf, and social auxiliary workers who are deaf, and they can provide the access, especially for deaf people who are victims who need to access these services at SAPS, and maybe they can even be trainers, facilitate training, because we know that people with disabilities are not always there at the stations reporting cases every day. But in terms of intermediaries, if you can look into that option, that's all for now. Thank you so much, Chair.
Thank you so much, Honorable Drunken. Mahlengwa.
Thank you, Chairperson. First of all, let me welcome a very comprehensive report and interesting. One of our members can say it has given us a hope. Indeed, it gives us a hope. Having said that, I also worried about the perpetrators who are just out there, even here at Ulundi. Tomorrow, the group of civil society and the community, they are going to march with so-called Zondela, where the father of two children were killed by him just because he wanted to kill their mother, and the mother went away. But the matters were reported, taken by the police, and he's out threatening everyone now that no one can touch him. That is the worry of the community now. But I have one clarity-seeking question to the advocate. The issue of Stellenbosch children, students, that student has suffered for rape, and now he suffered for not at school. Suffered for rape, and now he's not at school. What happened? What is your view about this? Because she becomes vulnerable. She becomes lost. She is in a Los Angeles because this pain for rape, and now the pain not at school. That is a clarity seeking question. I thank you.
Thank you, ma'am. Honorable Ngwenya.
Thanks very much, Chair. And good morning to all the members of the multi-party caucus. Chair, I've got a few questions. I'd like to thank Honorable Chairperson for giving us the opportunity to participate in this meeting. And I welcome the presentation. And I would like to ask some few questions, Chairperson. My first question is on monitoring and evaluation of the GBVF related legislation. Chair, I wanted to check whether the Department of Justice have a monitoring and evaluation plan to monitor the implementation and the impact of these laws to society. And if yes, how often will these laws be reviewed? The second question, Chair. I want to know how can we ensure that protection orders really work to protect women against perpetrators. Once it has been handed out or served. The third question, Chair. The first point of call for the victim of VBVF is the police. To what extent will the department ensure that it works with the police to ensure that the police and the family violence against child protection unit incapacitated on the GBVF relating legislation, especially on the amendment of the three legislation? The last question, Chairperson. I want to check, is it the department planning to have roadshow exercise to all provinces to ensure that the society in aware about the challenges into the GBVF laws? Will they empower the community to understand better their rights to GBVF laws? I thank you, Chairperson, and once again for the opportunity. Ngiyabonga, Mama.
Thank you, Ma. Now I will call upon Honorable Van Stalbeck.
Thank you very much, Chairperson, and good morning to Honorable Chairperson, members, our leadership of Parliament, as well as our Chief Whip and Deputy Chief Whip, as well as the members of the Multi-Party Women's Caucus. Chairperson, I would like to welcome the presentation as well as your input that you made in the beginning into this crucial matter that we are dealing with. Chairperson, I've been covered by majority of the members, so just one outstanding item is, it's been indicated that there's no adequate budget. So I would like to know, in terms of the budget, when will the costing be done, and also how will the lack of adequate budget impact on the implementation of these acts? Like example, will you prioritize some and leave the others behind, or what is the way forward or the plans that are in place in order to ensure that the budget doesn't negatively affect the implementation of this act? Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Member. Honorable Lucas, your turn.
Deputy Chair. Can I unmute the Deputy Chair? She is muted.
Honorable Lucas. IT, can you assist, please?
Chair, we are trying to assist. We are asking IT.
Please. And this is the last hand.
or maybe I give the opportunity to the department when she has been assisted, then she will come in.
Thank you, Chairperson. I would like the Deputy Minister to give us the go-ahead.
Thank you. DM?
No, please go ahead, Advocate Kambula.
Thank you, DM, and thank you, Chairperson. I would like just to, I'm going to be handing other questions to the team that I have come here with to respond. First then, the first question that is coming from Honorable Motapo is to say that, yes, she's taking me back to the Dabezita program that we had, where then we were training the traditional leaders on domestic violence and how to handle these issues. So the request that they be included in our working group that deals with training, I will definitely ensure that that is done. And I apologize for that exclusion. So I would also request that as she is the head of we welcome it as Women of South Africa, but now we have the leadership of a woman for the National House of Traditional Leaders. So I will request that if she can also give us a representative for the Pillar 3 to be part of. The doors are still open for membership. We're really welcome. But I would also like to say to the chairperson that the traditional leaders are the members of the National Intersectoral Committee for Sexual Offences, and also they are also participating in one for the domestic violence, but they are not in the NSP Pillar 3, so in any of the NSP collaborative. So we will really appreciate their participation. Now, coming to Honorable Manani So, the issues of intermediaries and that we need to to expand the scope and ensure that we also hire young people. This then it's a matter that I think that, you know, when we were doing the draft determination, which now we have already received the inputs from the general public, determination for the categories of persons who are competent for appointment as intermediaries, we decided not to put the age restriction. And so what we mean is that young people will still...
Chair,
Mangwe, yes.
Can I disturb you a little bit? The deputy chair of NSOP, Mama Lucas, he's outside she's waiting on the waiting room. She said no one is opening for her. She was
we attending to the issue, Mangwe. I'm attending to it. I've already sent the message to the secretary to check with the IT. And I said the moment she's unmuted, I'll give her an opportunity to ask the questions that she wanted to raise. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Chair, for that explanation. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay. May I continue?
Yes.
So what I would say here is that we decided, we were very cautious on this chairperson, not to put a particular age group so that it is open. to anyone who has that qualification, because there are also educational qualifications that have been set on the determination. So what I can say here is that young people are already covered there as long as they have the qualifications that are required, which are not really up. It's only just that I don't have the copy right now, you know, so that I can share with the committee. It's in my laptop, but I can share it at a later stage. So now coming to the issue of publication, this community, the awareness program and so on, as I said here, that we have the media and public communications working group. And last week we were sitting with them and where they were presenting their plan and what is it that they need to do and so on. I was looking here on the participants that they have not come here. But you know, we have put a lot of emphasis on them that the communication must be reflective of all the languages that we have. But what I'm going to take back to them is that we need also to introduce the Braille material. Some of the products must be in Braille, in large font, and so that it's more accessible and audio, the audio visual they are included in their plan already. So now they need then to just to include Braille and but they have ensured that the plan that they have, which they have it's also having the road shows as well that will be going to the different regions and communities and so on. So we will be seeing a lot of that visibility during the month of June. And this is a plan that also includes the civil society, so it will be done jointly. So we are expecting a lot of activities that will be coming out of this exercise, particularly during the month of June. So, and now, but I've taken, I will take it to the committee that we need then to ensure that it is strengthened, particularly at community level. Now, coming to the issues of disability, Honorable Zelna, that we need then to ensure that the disability issues are dealt with at service points. I would like just to say that as a department, saying it to the caucus, that as a department, we developed a national policy framework that is for the reasonable accommodations for persons with disabilities at the service points in our court. So, and we started to implement it last year. We have 78 courts now that are disability-centric, that also have that information, the Braille, the audios, the large font, and the physical accessibility, and also looking into also into the issues of the language accessibility. But what I can say is that we have also said to the courts that every court, before it can be certified as a disability-centric court, because we have developed a checklist that is signed by the regional head to check the compliance of the resources and so on. There's a coordinator that for each and every court has been nominated, somebody who's going to be looking into all these issues to ensure that then there's compliance then with the minimum standards for the national policy framework. So then, but we have said that the policy requires that they have a directory of the language the sign language organizations. For instance, they have some courts, they have DEFSA, you know, being part of those. But I will also then be communicating that the death of the Lari citizens also be included in those, but not only with our court, but throughout the service points. So, you know, we need also to, because this is an advice that I got from the Department of Women, to say that maybe we need to ensure at every service point that then that directory, it is there. And secondly, that we are able then, when we have somebody who is, I will make an example, deaf, who is coming at the service,
can we teach?
That's not
the department had something on the issue of budgets, and it would have been relevant then. I don't think my question is relevant anymore. And if my present, if my contribution is not necessary, I should be told. I should not be the only one that all of a sudden cannot unmute myself. It should not be like that. I feel very disappointed and I'm very unhappy. I must record my unhappiness. I know I'm not important, but it's not necessary for people to treat me like that. So I don't know whether my question is still relevant for you.
Our apologies, Honorable Lucas. I think you're still relevant because she's still responding. She only responded to a few, I think three, if not four. We're still having three to be responded on.
Chairperson.
Our apologies. Can you please raise the questions that you wanted to raise or the inputs?
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Chairperson. And I really also wanted to express our appreciation for the comprehensive action plan that was in front of us. I've been covered by Honorable Van Schalkwyk on the issue of budgeting, because I know usually you hear all these ambitions plans, and all of us see, heard also advocate commenting Parliament on the urgency and seriousness with whom we take, with which we took the amendments. But usually when we have heard all these ambitions plans, at the end of the day, the issue of budget become a problem. Now, my question was on the PCM, the issue of the mobile app. And we know issue of accessibility and inclusivity, as expressed by Comrade Chain or by Honorable Chain Mananiso, on how for the PCM, how to make sure that particularly rural women will be able to access that. And what is expected of the victim if you actually put a online application for a protection order. What is expected of the victim to immediately have with them to make sure that they comply to what is expected from the Justice Department? I think that is the other issues I'm covered and I will leave, but also this past weekend we were in Northwest and the issue of the police came out very strongly. So how is the justice cluster going to make sure that they coordinate the approach to the implementation of the applications of this legislation? Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you very much. Advocate,
thank you, Chair. I think let me just start with the questions and move on with the questions that actually have been raised by Honorable Lucas, because I was finalizing the one that relates I was dealing with the deaf intermediaries. So saying that that is one area that we have not covered in the determination. The determination for the appointment of categories of persons to be appointed as intermediaries. So this one, I would definitely ask that it be included. And I thank so much, Honorable Velma, for including, for raising it with us. Now, getting then to the issue of vetting, and I will give it to the NRSO to respond, but I would like just to quickly go to, since Honorable Lucas said that we'll be leaving, to say that with the PCM mobile app, so mentioned the issue of how is it going to be accessible to women who are in rural communities. There is a study that we did, that has been done, all right? It's not done by us. That also shows that there is many women in rural communities. They have the mobile access to this. It's only just that I have not opened this study right now, but it is a study that we presented previously to the to Parliament to say that this is what is in existence. But it to say that now that to we have to. This process will run parallel with the other, that we say that then when we need to put aside a budget for people, for each and every court that will have a clerk of the court and a magistrate that will be on call. Because the problem with us for not implementing that provision, it was because of the fact that the Domestic Violence Act, which is existing right now, was not costed. So now that is one of the issues that we need to ensure that there's budget that is set aside for that, so that in every court there is somebody who's going to be there available to assist that victim, and also to use the mobile court as well, because this is one of the innovation that is now in KZN to ensure that we have those mobile courts that are moving, all right, to ensure that then those services are brought to the rural women. And now in terms of us then working together with SAPS, SAPS is also part of this initiative, and we will be, they are part of this. So we will ensure that then they also address then the problems that are there, that are in Northwest. So we have a Northwest representative in Pillar 3. So I will be releasing this to her so as to ensure that then she participates in addressing whatever issues that are there in the Northwest. So now coming to the online application for the protection order, this is just, it's not stopping the manual application. So people will still be going to our court, but now we anticipate with this online application a solution, it's gonna reduce the queues at our courts. So now there's gonna be the speedy attendance, you know, to those cases by those who will be going, who will be entering our courts, and by those then will be applying online. So then the costing then will also be ensuring that we have the dedicated capacity that will be looking, focusing mainly on the online applications. And then we're also having the manual applications, those the step in applicants in our courses. So that's going to be adding more, meaning that we'll be needing more courts of clerk to attend to this application. So I think then I have covered Honorable Lucas. Let me then move on in terms of before she can leave, I will then ask then Ms. Shoghi Shabalala to address the issue of how do we do the localization before Honorable Lucas can leave the space. Shoghi, would you please respond to the localization of the NSP?
Okay. Good afternoon, members, and to you, Chairperson, good afternoon as well. I will respond to that one, but there was also a question around what is it that is happening in the DHET space, higher education as well as basic education. At a very high level, Chairperson, I need to say the department is establishing rapid response teams, and these are the teams that are multi-sectoral on the ground as we localize the implementation of the National Strategic Plan. All key stakeholders are represented. We have already established in three provinces, which is Eastern Cape, KZN, and Gauteng. We will be rolling this out to all other provinces. And that is where the Department of Justice will then be roped in terms of building capacity of those service providers on the ground, but ensuring that they too are like the train the trainer program, that they can take it further in terms of building capacity of women on the ground. And that will complement to whatever communication program that the Department of Justice shall have concluded in partnership with GCIS. The other one, Chairperson, was around the issue of the projects within the education space. I need to indicate that with higher education, Chairperson, Higher Health has implemented a 24-hour national crisis line. And this is for all students who need support for GBV as well as mental health issues. They've included the mental component, but they've also further facilitated dialogues that are focusing on awareness, prevention, and support of students through peer educators as well. So that on its own seemed to be closing the gap around the issue. And that 24 national crisis line is more responsive at a point when students would need it at that particular time. But furthermore, they do have various modalities and programs that run across all the campuses through their second curriculum peer-to-peer education program. And that one aims to also deal with issues of knowledge generation and creating demand among students so that they too can be mobilized on how to access the service, but how to support one another. And I believe probably they can be invited at some point. They can talk more to this kind of intervention and the kind of services that they would give to the students, including what they do call sexual GBV risk screening. They do that, and if there are some red flags that they observe, then they intervene and engage the students or assist the students in that area of work. So we've also partnered as a department, as I conclude, with the German embassy, GIZ, and part of the partnership in the three programs that we've agreed upon, one of the three programs is the flagship on the GBV prevention in the schools. They've already started in the Eastern Cape and Gauteng province, and as soon as they've concluded with the flagship program, we will evaluate the impact of the program with a view to then roll it out to other provinces. Our approach is that we are concluding, as we speak today, we are consulting civil society on the prevention strategy. We believe that once we have the prevention strategy in place, it will be the anchor in assisting us in tackling gender-based violence and femicide. And these pilot projects and the prevention strategy will ensure that the programs that are emerging are evidence-based, evidence-informed, and practice-informed. In the absence of that, we will not know what is it that is working, what is it that is not working. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Chair. Now, I think we have also covered then the question that was asked by Honorable Mananiso. So on the issue of how do we intend to reach the district municipalities. Now, I will ask then the NRSO, Ms. Majila, to respond to the issue of the vetting of the educators, DBE and DHET. Ms. Majila?
Yes, thank you. Thank you, Advocate Kambula. Good afternoon, please, Honorable Chairperson.
Introduce yourself first as who you are. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Good afternoon, Honorable Chairperson, Honorable members, the DM and colleagues. My name is Ndomzodwa Machila, and I am the registrar.
You can open your video.
Okay.
If it's not going to disturb you, you can also open your video. Thank you.
I have opened that. Good afternoon again, Honorable Chairperson. My name is Ndomzodwa Machila, and I am the registrar of the National Register for Sex Offenders. With regard to the vetting of educators as well as the Department of Higher Education, we have started the engagements with the Department of Basic Education, and we have also engaged community safety in terms of the processes that they need to follow to apply or to vet their educators or anyone who comes into contact with vulnerable persons. Currently, as Advocate Kambula has alluded to the fact that we will be decentralizing the function, the way in which this will be working, each and every director legal will be performing or discharging the functions of the registrar in issuing the certificate. So each and every province that falls within the Department of Basic Education will be linked onto each regional office that we have in the country. And one thing that I can also mention is that we have made strides in vetting the educators within the private space. That is the CURO and the South African Council of Educators as well. Before any potential educator comes into the system, they will then forward the applications through to us, and then we have commenced with the vetting in that space. So we will be extending all those functions into the space of the Department of Basic Education as well as the higher education and training. Thank you so much, Chairperson.
Thank you. But before you leave, I wanted to understand something. You did mention the issue of started with the engagement. I don't know whether you do have a time frame on how long is it going to take in order to implement, because the issue of engagement to me is it means that we're still far to the process to be implemented. Do you have a time frame in place?
Yes.
Or do we have a plan?
Yes, we do.
For that?
We do have the time frame. Because the date of implementation, we had set it at the 30th of June. So with effect from the 30th of June, when we implement the Act, all the provincial departments of basic education will be allowed to forward the applications through. So the plan is there. And they also have the project plan in terms of, because we are lacking in capacity in this space. So we will make a determination of how many we will be able to do per province throughout the whole country for this financial year. But we are starting from the 30th of June this year, Chairperson. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chairperson. Now I'm going to be responding to the question of Honourable Magdalena. He raised an issue of the bail. I would like just to say that, as I have mentioned in my presentation, that the criminal and Related Matters Amendment Act has made certain changes that I believe that are groundbreaking in terms of making us then to clean up the management of the applications for the bail. So one of those is to say that if the prosecutor accedes with the accused who's applying for the bail, has to look into the risk factors of the complainant before that is done, and the voice of the complainant need to be heard during that the bail applications, where the victim will be saying that this is this that I'm experiencing right now, I'm scared of this and so on, so that it goes straight into the court record when the magistrate is considering this issue, will be taking into consideration the evidence that has been the evidence of the complainant. That is what is in the Act. It requires that to be done. But secondly, I would like to say to the members of the caucus that one thing that that we need to consider is that, you know, we have, I would say that it is a self-conflicting constitution, the Bill of Rights. We have Section 9 that promotes equality, all right? And it says that, you know, everyone is equal before the law and has the right to equal protection and benefit of law. That is Section 9. Then we have a Section 35 of the Constitution that says that gives right to the arrested, to the detained and the accused. And it's a myriad of rights. They are endless. If you are reading them, you will find that you move from one page to another, reading the rights, the constitutional rights of the arrested, of the detained, of the accused person. The same constitution has no dedicated right, there's no dedicated provision for the rights of the victim of crime, which is a huge lacuna in our constitution, because all the other rights that are there in the Bill of Rights are also enjoyed by the accused person, the arrested, the detained, and so, you know, when I'm talking about the right to the right to human dignity, right to life, the right to access to information, and so on. So all of those rights, all right, are shared with them. So what it means is that for as long now, I will bring this scenario now to a court environment. So when the country, in trying to address this issue, used the Victims' Charter. Victims' Charter is a charter. It is not enforceable. All right, and it provides them, you know, the seven rights that the victims of crime are enjoying. And now we are in a process of which is DSD. DSD now is developing, as we know, is developing the Victim Support Services Bill. All right, that is also looking into providing those rights for the victim of crime. And we also have the Criminal Procedure Act that has some of the rights that are enjoyed by the victim of crime. For instance, I talked about the intermediary services. That's a right that the victim of crime will enjoy, all right? But now, when the victim is in court, the accused person is coming with the supreme law, holding the constitution. And this constitution, every law that parliament must pass, that law must bow to the constitution. So then there is an imbalance in terms of the protection when it comes to the accused person and the victim. The accused person is protected by the constitution. The victim of crime is protected by the Victim's Charter that is toothless, all right, and also by the Criminal Procedure Act that must pass the constitutionality test, all right, of the right of the victim of the accused person is a serious self-confliction that I'm bringing it to this caucus that. At some point, we will need, I think this is something that should have been done long time ago, of addressing. We needed to amend Section 35. So why the Constitution has dedicated rights for the arrested, for the detained, for the accused person, and is silent, mum, in terms of providing the dedicated rights for the victim of crime. For as long as we have that imbalance, we will still have situations where then the presiding officer, because the presiding officer now has to balance these two rights, has to balance the rights of the accused person with the rights of the victim of crime, and the rights of the victim of the accused person are constitutional. So then we will still be having a level of unfairness. We will continue amending and amending legislation.
Advocate, the IT is asking you to remove the presentation for a good broadcast. Please. Thank you.
So we will continue. I think that I have removed it, yes. So we will continue. Let me put this full screen. We will continue then having this imbalance, Chairperson. We need to have Section 35 amended to include the rights of the victim of crime. And should we do that, we will have a situation where then the victim of crime is holding the constitution, and as the accused person comes to court holding the constitutional rights. So that is one thing that I would like to say in terms of the bill. Now, moving on in terms of the the MNE? Have we developed the MNE for the implementation of the Tree Amendment Act? No, the answer is no. But it is something that we are looking into doing. But first, we say that let's see the compliance. Let's see the readiness for all these departments, because we're talking about over 10 departments that need to be ready for the implementation. And the MNE, Honorable Ngwenya, we will ensure that we develop, because it's one thing that we have noticed is that, you know, how are we planning to do this? Let me just state that first, is that we have for sexual offences, there is the national policy. It has a provision there, Section 65. Yes, I think so. But it says that there must be the national policy framework for the management of the sexual offences matters. All right, that must be tabled in Parliament. So it was tabled in 2012, and it has the act says that it must have been reviewed after 5 years of implementation, and the 5 years ended in 2017. So in 2017 we started with the process of amending the NPF, that is the National Policy Framework, but then when we were getting now to finalizing that process, then the process of 2018 of women marching, of the presidential summit being held, and the introduction of the presidential summit declaration, which was then giving the country the actual country agenda on matters on how we should be managing the issues of GBVF. So it meant that we had to pause, all right, so as to do that. So the each and every, so for the Domestic Violence Act, all right, it makes no provision for the development of the National Policy Framework. But what we say that we're going to do is we're going to develop the National Policy Framework for Domestic Violence Matters and tie it with the implementation plan that will be intersectoral, including all the departments. And secondly, that will also be accompanied by the MNE plan, will be used then as a control a document to ensure that there's an effective implementation on all those responsibilities that for the different stakeholders. And we want to make it to be multisectoral so that it also includes the civil society organizations as well, in compliance then with the presidential summit declaration that includes the civil society and every person who's living in South Africa. So then the NPF for the sexual offenses, all right, it's in our plan for the department, all right, that is the branch plan, that we must have it tabled in Parliament, because now all these processes have been done, and we already have a draft, so now we are incorporating all these changes. So it will be accompanied with the implementation plan that Parliament will consider, and will have the element then of the MNE injected in it. So that is my response then in terms of that. But now there is one question that I would like just to respond to that talks about the efficacy of the protection orders. I would like to say, Chairperson, that there is in all, the legislation put together by the leading countries in domestic violence have one thing in common, which is the provision of the protection order. But now coming to the efficacy, so before then, as the department was amending this legislation, so this is one of the things that were considered as to what are other countries, how are they ensuring and tightening the issue of the protection order, because we have had situations here in South Africa of women dying having this protection order, and the same applies in other countries, all right, it's not something that is peculiar to to South Africa. So, but in here, in this provision, we have put in two provisions. Let me just, then there's a provision that says that the court may issue, depending on the circumstances of the case, may issue a safety monitoring notice that requires a SAPS to be in constant contact with the survivor without the knowledge of the victim. So it is just one way then of ensuring that a victim who is saying that, or a survivor who says that, I think this person is going to kill me. All right. So there must be then, the court will issue under those circumstances that safety monitoring notice that will make then SAPS to issue, all right, a police official who will ensure that then it is in constant contact with that victim to provide then the safety. And the other thing that I would like to say is that moving on with the civil society, because we developed with the National House of Traditional Leaders and the NPA with and Justice, we develop the safety plan, all right, which is a document then that now we're looking at amending. It's going to be reviewed by the MRC, the Medical Research Council. We have already talked with them, and they are assisting us in that. So as to ensure that, to tighten it, to make it, to respond to all these issues of women. So the safety plan, then, it is assisting the victim to identify, it's for those, because the Act does not force the victim to leave the shared residence. So some of them are refusing to leave the shared residence. And if we are forcing them, then it will be subjecting them to secondary victimization. So whilst they are staying with their abusers, so what we're saying is that they must use the safety plan. So the safety plan then says that identify your rescue persons as you are in this abusive relationship and in this shared residence. And secondly, identify your escape routes as well. So the rescue persons are the people that you will notify. It's either you use a blank SMS, you notify them with that to say that this is going to be starting right now, so please alert police. And secondly, you need then to identify your rescue exit point, all right? Your escape exit point from your house and so on. And also pack your escape bag as well, and ensure that you pack lights, you put in the toys, the favorite toys of the children, and a little money that you have, and identify your escape place as well. So it is that we have put together, which is now going to be reviewed, all right? And it is also available in a lipstick holder as well. And that lipstick holder is to make it then to be discreet, all right? So that then the abuser is unable then to detect that is this a lipstick or is but when it, the way that it looks, it is in a bottle that looks like a lipstick. So to make it then so that the victim, wherever she is, she has that information, all those contact details of the people will be assisting. So now we are taking the safety plan. The reason that we are reviewing it, because we want it now to be aligned to the Amendment Act, because the Amendment Act is making the provision for the safety monitoring notice, so that then the two speak together, so that then the police are also involved in this exercise of ensuring that then we are protecting our people. But also then, I think the other provision that is going to be helping us in terms of the Amendment Act, it is the one that criminalizes bystanderism, to say that every other person has the legal obligation to report the suspected abuse of persons of children, persons with disabilities, and older persons. It's those three categories. As you know, Chairperson, we wanted all of the categories to be included, but in Parliament and the civil society was not happy with the proposal that was made by the department. So now it was narrowed to those categories that I've just mentioned. So this is a provision that also criminalizes that. So what it means is that people will be arrested. So if you know as your neighbor that your neighbor is beaten every day, all right, so you have a responsibility to report that. If you know that the child next door is 10 years old, is 12 years old, and is pregnant, so why are you keeping quiet? You have to go and report to the police that there's a child there who is pregnant and is underage. So it means that there must be some kind of a sexual abuse and end. So if failure to do that, then it amounts to a crime, and we're going to move with speed and when this act, when the date of commencement has been set, to ensure that people, you know, we increase accountability at all levels, starting from family level, neighborhood, and so on, to ensure that there's proper protection that we are providing. Now, coming into the costing, which is the last question that I would like to deal with, and is, as I have said, that me personally, Chairperson, I will be open with this to say that I have not been happy with the way that we have been costing our legislation. So we need to take a different approach. And this is what I'm committed that it must be done. So as I said, that provision to provision analysis. So it is something that there's an initial costing that was done. But now we have included rape crisis to work with our department. And also the members of the pillar tree to ensure that we leave no stone unturned in terms of costing. And this is a process. So it's a process. There's a draft that is already there. So now June is a month that's going to be quite hectic for this team, because we have a working team that is led by the Department of Justice. Let me say co-led by the Department of Justice and Rape Crisis. We've included the civil society organization into this. So we want it to be done properly. So by the end, what we have said to them is that by the end of June, we need a second draft. The second draft that will be scrutinizing and with all the stakeholders. We don't want people who are going to be saying that, yes, we have enough police. When you are saying having enough police, what do you mean? So those are the questions that we're going to be asking. So if then this provision that says that there must be the safety monitoring notice that is issued to police, we want SAPS to give us enough information in terms of capacity, all right? What is, are there any dedicated capacity that they will be providing for that? If they say that no, so how many police officials that we need, that you will need, and then we cost that. We want it to be done that way. And I'm committed, Chairperson, to ensure that this thing is done. Because it is one contributor to us failing to effectively implement our legislation. And the same that will apply with the NRSO, because as a department with the NRSO, we have been struggling to provide enough resources for the NRSO. So now I need the proper costing for those services. Now the decentralization, what do we mean with that when we say that? So what that model will be properly costed, but tying it with the criminal Penal Law, Sexual Offences and Related Matters Amendment Act for the NRSO. So it's something that really needs to be done. If we're gonna come and say that billions, let it be. Let the country know that this is what we will need in order to implement. But of course, then we need also to look, this costing will also need to take that approach that will be saying that how can we as a country do more with less? All right. As I have said in my introduction, that at one point in my presentation, that we must not be oblivious of the fact that there is we are experiencing an economic decline. It's not only our country; it's a global situation, and I call it economic menopause. We're drawing it to that level. So we need then to, because we will end up saying that no, this cannot be implemented because there are no resources. So we need to look into multi-skilling approach. And yesterday, Chairperson, we had a working session as Pillar 3 and other stakeholders that we invited. And we had there's one magistrate, a regional court president, went to Cairo, Egypt, and was dealing with the issues of victim support services. So I said that let's have a working session and to interrogate the way that we are providing our support services. Are we doing it right? So we were looking into that and looking at all of these support services that we are providing, and we made a resolution to call DSD to say, DSD, come back with your support services bill. We need to unpack it again and see if it responds with this now approach that is taken globally, and see as to whether we cannot improve what we are doing here in South Africa, so that, because there can be no success in the criminal justice system without us providing responsive support service to the victims of crime. So, because the victim must be at the center. Without the evidence of the victim, prosecution cannot succeed. So we need to make then the criminal justice system not only to be responsive, but also to be attractive to them, so that they come into the criminal justice system, they stay in the criminal justice system, they are cooperative in the criminal justice system until the end of the process, so that we have an effective criminal justice system. So it's one of the issues that we dealt with yesterday, Chairperson. So I think that I have dealt with all the questions, and I'm not sure whether the team have anything to add. So I will be giving an opportunity with the permission of the Chairperson, of course.
Well, thank you, Advocate. I don't know if the team has got something to add, but I seen something also in the chat that has been raised by the DM Muloi. If maybe you can respond on that, of a 9-year-old child in Limpopo who gave birth recently. Oh, I can see the response there.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. The question says that there is a 9-year-old child in Limpopo who gave birth recently.
And brief, please, the advocate.
Yes. And apparently parents gave consent for such. Which law allows that? If it's customary law, then we should revoke that immediately. This is something that we are working on here. We have Section 54 of the Criminal Law, Sexual Offences and Related Matters Amendment Act that criminalizes then the failure to report any sex crime, even the suspicion thereof, of a person who has been of a child who who is a victim of a sex crime. So it places a responsibility on any person to report. So South Africa outlaws that. The criminal law, Sexual Offences and Related Matters Amendment Act, makes it a crime for a person not to report that. And also, we have the whole chapter that deals with the crimes of children. So a nine-year-old, in terms of our legislation, cannot consent. And here, it's already a crime. And in South Africa, it's also a crime for a child to be married. That is outlawed by the Children's Act in South Africa. It makes it a crime. There is no parent who can consent to a marriage of a child in South Africa. And also, now is pregnant. So what it means is that it is a serious crime that is there that needs to be reported to the police and that person to be charged. So thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you very much, Advocate and the collective, for the responses and the clarity that has been given to this caucus. Honorable members, I also want to remind this House that this is a sitting of Parliament. There are rules and regulations that guide us. Honorable members were raising the issue of Ms. Sharif June. I also learned that she's the member of the Pillar 3. She was eating during the proceedings with her video open. It's uncalled for. Please, we need to respect the proceedings and observe all the rules and regulations of the House to the latter, please. Honorable members, let's continue. Is there any other hands that need to be clarified or that needs to raise questions as far as the briefing and the responses we have been given? If not, then we'll release the department in order to proceed with our program, bearing in mind that there is a sitting mini plenaries at 2. Thank you very much.
Inko Mutati.
Is there any other hand? None. Meaning we can release the department for now. You can say shinene sambani kahle mihlayiseka.
You can say Chairperson. Thank you.
Yeah.
Let's proceed with our meeting. There is an item. I think it's one item now.
Nah.
Ah, we. Upinda nga nga wafu magazi. Ngo muzimu. Wafu magazi awarenda. Bare ah.
Ah.
Thank you.
No.
Thank you very much. Ndandiyavanna.
Okay.
We. Let's proceed. Mandy, can you flag the item that follows?
Yes, Chair, the action plan is flagged.
Is this the corrected one?
Yes, Chair. The highlighted one are red. Yes, I will to the page now.
Oh, okay. Thank you very much. Honorable members, Mandy, don't inconvenience me. Thank you. This is the Gender-Based Violence and Femicide Action Plan that needs to be adopted by this caucus.
The action plan is informed by the Multi-Party Women Caucus, identifying the gender-based violence and femicide as a priority focus areas. There are two focus areas that we proposed. The one for empowering communities about gender-based violence and femicide laws. And the second one is an oversight on implementation of pillars of NSP or gender-based violence as reported by various departments. Then, the engagement that will unfold before conducting the visit. It's acknowledging the importance of partnership with key stakeholders in various provinces, as well as being fully prepared prior conducting provincial visit. The Multi-Party Women Caucus will engage the Department of Justice and Correctional Services on the readiness to implement the recent asserted GBV laws, amended GBV laws, as well as date of commencement of the laws. We're receiving an update from the department now. We also want to engage with provincial legislatures and municipal councils, women caucus, about identification of communities and available relevant stakeholders for the planned initiatives. The relevant stakeholders to include the civil society organization, where we'll be including even men's formation, organization for persons with disabilities, and the LGBTQIA+, the tertiary institution, the traditional leaders, the religious bodies, and any other available relevant stakeholders in selected areas. The provincial legislatures and municipal councils, women's caucus will assist in planning and the implementation of this GBVF action plan. The action plan has got the proposed engagement, the purpose of sessions, and the proposed timeframes. Like I was indicating that the Department of Justice was here now presenting to us. The multi-party is to identify communities to be targeted for the planned initiatives and also to collaborate and partner during implementation of planned outreach and oversight activities. And this is happening now. And I have identified the provinces, all the nine provinces. And in all the nine provinces, we have put the provinces into threes. We are going to start with the Eastern Cape. And can you go down, Emily? The Eastern Cape, the Free State, and Gauteng. These are the first three provinces that will be going for oversight. And the proposed action is the same. What we'll be doing in the first province will also be doing in the second, the third, until the ninth provinces. It may only differ according to the plan that the province and also the stakeholders in that particular province that will bring in. But besides that, the plan is to meet all the provinces, the same stakeholders up to the end of the provinces. And we have scheduled the time frame. The first one, it will be from July to September, and the second batch of provinces,
It will be in October to December 2022. That will be KwaZulu-Natal, Limpopo, and Mpumalanga. Then the last batch will be the Northwest, the Northern Cape, and the Western Cape. And the time frame will be January to March 2023. Then the National Multi-Party Women Caucus, Provincial Legislature Women Caucuses, and the Municipal Council's Women Caucus will, after each provincial visit, deliberate on issues that came to the fore and identify programs to advocate for.
Carolina, which is a state council.
Can we switch off our mics, please? Just be patient for a while. Masonto, Honorable Masonto, can you switch off your mic? You are disturbing us. Thank you. The programs to advocate for in order to ensure practical solution and positive and lasting impact on communities. This is the proposed action plan that this caucus is intending to undertake with the stakeholders and also the timeframes that has been attached to each of us. Thank you very much, honorable members. We can engage if there's something that you want to engage on, then we adopt the action plan. Thank you.
Chair?
I see the hand of Honorable Mananiso.
Thank you, Chairperson. Can you hear me?
Yes,
Chair. I would like to move for the adoption of the program of action as a living document, that it will be amended as it when there are issues that need to be changed on the program. Thank you.
Any second for the mover? Okay, I can see the hand of Honorable Mutapo.
Thank you, Honorable Chair.
What you did, Vo Masondo, Vo Ntuli.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. I fully support Honorable
Thank you.
Okay.
Yes. Honorable Ntuli, is there something that you wanted to say?
Thank you, Chair. No, I was seconding Honorable Manani, but now it's seconded. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you so much. You were so progressive. Thank you, Honorable Members. Now the action plan has been adopted, meaning is the document that we're going to use going forward. Is there any other things that you want to understand as far as this is concerned or... If not, then...
No, there isn't nothing. There's not much, Chairperson, but just to appreciate your agility and your ability to care such a session, I want to say thank you so much.
Ndolivu wawe, mkoma na wanga.
Ah, Ndimurat. Long live the chair. Chair, before you close, I just wanted you to conscientize your staff. they must always keep their eyes on the gadget, because we normally have a disconnection of a network. The minute you want to come back, and they'll accept you after a long time, so we lose touch with the meeting. Can they always keep their eyes? We know it's not their fault, but they must also assist us in reconnecting. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you very much for the advice. Shibeletindlebeni, they will assist in that regard. Thank you. Honorable members, thank you very much for your participation. The meeting was vibrant, and I feel very much honored for your participation and your presence. Thank you very much. And my apology again to Honorable Lucas. I don't think it was a planned thing. But again, I just want to send my apologies. Bear with us. Next time, I don't think it's going to repeat itself. And Honorable Members, thank you very much. The meeting stands adjourned.
Thank you, Chair.
Good luck in your...